Then little Indian boys went out to dine. One took his little self, and then there were nine. Nine little Indian boys sat up very late. One overslept himself, and then there were eight.
Hello, eight and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
I love books so much that I will murder you if you take my book. And it'll be okay, because street justice.
I'm going to reverse that, and every time Gabs murders someone, one of her books disappears.
How will I have any books? I commit so much murder.
I was going to say, your bookcases overflow so quickly that your intake of books must be very high, considering the number of murders you commit. Has anyone seen my copy of Gone Girl? I think it disappeared after you murdered that guy.
Oh, damn. Oh, well. Didn't need to reread it anyway.
That's right. One on my list.
This week we read And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie, the Dame of Mystery or something.
Something like that. The Madam of Murder. Do people call her things like that?
Probably.
I don't know. I saw.
She's old and British, so.
I saw a Doctor Who episode with her. It was silly. As many of those episodes are.
I feel like I heard. I think the podcast I listened to was about her. Like, one week she, like, randomly disappeared, and then they, like, found her at a hotel, and she's been, like, chilling out for a couple of days. Like, just, like, got off this train and tell her where she was going, and, like, I don't know, it was weird.
The Doctor Who episode actually attempted to explain that disappearance.
Oh, really?
It had to do with, disposing of an alien.
Hell yeah, well, it's Doctor Who, so
right. That makes sense. Pretty much what you would expect.
We chose the book because, well, Agatha Christie's super famous and popular.
She's pretty well known. According to the copy of the book I have, she's outsold everyone, basically.
Yeah. It was a reader recommendation.
Yes.
And we've been doing a lot of those lately, so.
Also, I've never read anything by Agatha Christie.
Me neither.
So, fixed that.
And we also pretty much don't read mysteries for the podcast too much, so it was also a different choice.
I was going to say, or not for the podcast, really.
Yeah, Ben and I aren't really mystery readers.
I don't know why. It's not a genre I have anything against. It's not like every time I read a mystery, I get angry.
Like, unless you're reading Inferno or something.
Well, that's not really a mystery. That's just a bunch of bullshit. But yeah, it's just not a genre that usually pulls me in.
Me neither. And I can understand why someone would like reading mysteries, you know, trying to find all the clues and figuring out what's going on. But for me, like, that's not really why I read a book, I guess, so I don't really care. Does that make sense? And I'll read mysteries and enjoy them, but I don't go out of my way to read them, so. And I think part of that's because of the formula of a mystery.
Yeah, I do have it in my head that they are formulaic.
And this book definitely is, but we're pretty sure that's because it helped create the formula.
Could, for all I know.
Or worked on it a little bit. But yeah, I guess it's how I don't like CSI, because every fucking episode is the same. You know?
Right, yeah.
And that's, and if you're a mystery reader, like, feel free to set me straight and tell me I'm totally wrong and complete idiot, but I guess that's just my perception, so I kind of don't bother.
I would imagine that there's probably a lot of room within the genre for working around, and you can touch on your issues and whatnot if you're the type of person who likes to do that. And
are they Dresden Files mysteries? Detective books, right?
Well, he's Chicago's only working wizard, the only one in the Yellow Pages. It's not so much a mystery series, no. Okay. I wouldn't say so.
I thought they were like detective novels, but he just happened to be a wizard.
No, it's mostly like, I don't know, it's closer to the genre of, in each book we're going to give you a slightly different and, as things progress, nastier enemy to fight.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, my mistake. So, the genre, we basically said it like 12 million times just now. Mystery. Murder mystery.
Oh, I hadn't figured that out. That's the other reason I don't read mysteries. I'm slow at them.
This is the sort of thing you would experience if you were, like, if you paid to go to, like, a mystery, murder mystery party or something. Those are actually a lot of fun, so. Reminded me of one of those a little bit.
I see.
Except that people were in the book actually getting killed. And when you go to a murder mystery party, you typically do not get murdered.
Lame. I'm never going to one.
I was really disappointed when Scott and I went to Napa Valley because we did the Napa Valley Wine Train, and like one Saturday night once a month, they do a murder mystery thing where you can like get on, like pay to go on the train and do like a murder mystery dinner. And I was like, well, let's do that! And we flew in on like a Saturday night and we left on a Friday, so we barely missed it. I was like, no! I'm so upset. I was like, that'd be so fun, murder mystery on a train! But no. Damn it. So, let the record show. I'm sad. Plot synopsis.
Everybody dies. Yeah, well.
It's kind of the attitude of the characters in the book, too.
It is a little bit.
I actually tweeted about it, because I was like, someone dies, and everyone's like, oh, he died. Well, okay. Well, I just put his body in his room and move on.
Hope I'm not next. There's a little more paranoia as things build, but
yeah,
it never gets to full-fledged, paranoid, suspicious standoff sort of thing.
Well, I guess, like, none of the characters know each other well enough to be, like, really emotionally affected when they die. I don't know, I just feel like if I saw, like, two or three people drop dead, even if I didn't know them, I would still be, like, freaking out a lot more. These guys are too British. Yeah. Just sit down to breakfast and be really polite to each other.
I know there's an appropriate Cylon reference in here somewhere.
Totally. Yeah. Who's the Cylon?
Who's the murderer?
That would be kind of fun. They could have done an episode of Battlestar Galactica.
That was a murder mystery.
Yeah, so, I mean, the brief summary is not going to be too much longer than plot synopsis. Basically, 10 people get invited to Soldier Island under circumstances that are kind of weird, and once they're all there, they're basically trapped there, there's no boat, and they just start getting killed off one by one, and they have to try to figure out who's killing them. That's about it.
Was it Soldier Island in the version you read?
Uh-huh.
No, it was Indian Island in the version I read.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. That's interesting. Yes. Yeah. Soldier Island, and there were little soldiers.
Yeah, they were little... Ooh. Maybe they
were yours little Indians?
Maybe they were. For some reason, I didn't think twice about what the figures were, but I remember they said the island had the same profile as, like, an Indian's face or something like
that. Oh. I don't remember why it was called Soldier Island of mine, but yeah, I know Soldier Island.
All right then.
And apparently in the original version, it was something else.
Yeah, there were some tweaks. This one has been sold under other titles. Actually, if you want to be shocked, hop onto Google, punch in And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie, and then pull up the Wikipedia article on the novel.
You'll
You'll see the cover for the original title, which was 10 Little Niggers, which is a reference to a minstrel show version of the 10 Little Indians rhyme song, whatever you want to call it, I guess.
Right, in my book it was 10 Little Soldiers.
Oh, it was definitely 10 Little Indians in mine, though. Yeah. It had been retitled, and at the bottom it said also published or sold under the name 10 Little Indians.
Hmm.
So there was a transition from... there's a transition to Indians and then to... And then there were none, and then at some point, soldiers. Apparently.
Apparently. I didn't know that.
Trying to PC things up.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. There are no Indians or black people in this book.
Yeah. There are a couple soldiers, so...
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, the only brown people in the book are ones who just got brutally killed before the events of the book happened.
They weren't brutally killed. They were more like...
Starved to death?
Negligently killed.
Abandoned and then somehow murdered?
As far as I know, they're all fine. He just assumed they were dead. I doubt anyone went and looked for them. I'm talking about a bunch of British colonial dicks.
That's true. They're like, yeah, whatever, natives. Nah, they're probably dead.
What happened to them? I just abandoned them in the woods. I took all the rations and left.
And some of the natives he abandoned are like, dude, we're right here. And he's like, yeah, you all look the same, whatever.
Anywho, tea?
Tea? Yeah, squad. Hmm.
Stop it! We're people.
Fucking Brits. So the setting, see, I typed Soldier Island, but I don't know if I said it out loud, because you might have been like, what? Soldier Island, or Indian Island, off the coast of England, set in the 1930s, it was written, or it was published, I think, in, like, 38 or 39, originally, so.
Something like that.
It's safe to bet that it was probably set in the time it was written.
Is no special notice of what time it is given.
Yeah. And but it's definitely not modern day.
It'd be kind of funny if it was.
We can safely say.
I would kind of be interested to read a 1930s murder mystery novel set in 2014. See what their concept of it is.
Everyone has to leave their cell phones behind.
If someone in 1937 wrote that about something in 2014, you'd be like, they're a time traveler.
Yeah, totally.
No one saw that. They all thought we'd have video phones attached to our wall in our house.
Right.
Or our spaceship. None of them thought we'd carry phones with us everywhere.
That's crazy.
Exactly. That's
madness.
That's insane.
Yeah, video phones suck. No one likes them.
Yeah, as it turns out.
And that was, like, totally the wave of the future for a long time. And everyone's like, eh, whatever. Yeah, so point of view, you actually get into every character's head at some point in the book, I'm pretty sure, so.
Yeah, you even get an introspective thought or two from several of them.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, part of her way of trying to muddle up who could it be, because if you were just following one person, then you would definitely know it wasn't them, and then they'd be trying to figure it out, but she kind of hops around and tries to keep things mixed up.
Yeah.
I should also mention really quick, because this is a murder mystery and kind of a whodunit, that we should issue a spoiler warning, even though it was written in the 1930s. Neither one of us had ever read it before, so... If you do want to read And Then There Were None, and you don't want to know who the murderer is before you read it, then you should stop listening to our podcast, because we're totally going to spoil that.
Yeah. Also, with our plot synopsis of Everybody Dies is literally true.
That is true. Yeah.
In the past, we've said that's almost literally true. In this case, it is the full truth.
Yes. All the 10 characters we are going to talk about all die. Including a couple of other ones who aren't even in the book.
That's true.
So, everyone dies. Gurm got nothing on Christy. Shit.
Well, they all died much too tamely for a Gurm novel.
Oh, movie. That's true.
Alright. So... Because you get a little bit of everyone, and it is constantly shifting as she tries to obscure who might be the killer, there's not really a clear protagonist, or put another way, there's not really a protagonist.
Yeah, I don't think any one person could be classified as protagonist. There are a couple people who live longer than everyone else, but they're not really the protagonist.
No, it's not a... it's not a study of how Captain Lombard grows as a person over the course of two murderous days on an island.
No, definitely not. I mean, I would say, like, Vera might get the most character development, or at least you find out more about her, and she actually does come to change as she becomes more remorseful of her past, but she's not the protagonist.
Right.
So there's that.
I guess we'll make a couple of quick notes on these 10 characters.
Yeah, we're gonna go ahead and mention all of them, but some of them there's a little bit more to say than the other ones, so.
Yeah, so Vera.
Yeah, who I already mentioned.
Just, we were just talking about her.
Vera Claythorne.
Very British. She is a young lady, teacher governess type, it sounds like, more mm-hmm. than like a classroom teacher anyway.
Well, she is now. Right? She's a games mistress.
Okay. There we go.
But she used to be a governess type.
There we go. And she's I guess we're supposed to think she's a pretty solid woman.
Yeah.
Because she's a lot less hysterical than she could be.
She's fairly rational, and she, like, her first reaction to everything is not necessarily to melt down.
Right.
I mean, it was written in the 1930s, so she's not, like, a complete badass or anything.
Right.
But, I mean, she's capable. I liked the moment where she, like, put on her games mistress voice and was, like, hurting people. Okay, we're going to do this now. As an experienced teacher would do.
And she had a steady enough hand to take out Lombard when they were standing off at the end.
It's pretty impressive. Yeah, and her main thing is that she used to be a governess type to this little boy who always wanted to swim out to this rock in the sea, and she kept telling him no because he was an idiot and he was going to drown because he couldn't swim well enough.
Right.
And she fell in love with this little boy's uncle, Hugo. And, basically, he was, you know, talking about how he was in love with her, but he didn't really have the money to marry her, because all the inheritance went to his nephew instead of him, and she kind of got this idea in her head that if she let the little boy drown, then Hugo would inherit all the money, and then they could get married.
Yeah, so she, you know, these characters have pretty much all, one of the reasons they're targeted for death on this island is they've all committed, well, maybe murders?
Yeah.
They're kind of, they tend to be more crimes of exclusion or negligence than ones of, I don't know, I mean, Vera's plan was definitely had a plan, like, she definitely intended for the boy to die, but she didn't, like, hold his head under the water until he drowned. Just one day he was, please, can't I swim out to the rock? And she was like, go for it.
Yeah. And then she kind of waited a while before she swam after him.
Right.
Which you don't know till towards the end, because I actually felt bad for her most of the book. I was like, well, it's not really her fault that this, like, little kid ran away from her and she tried to chase him down and couldn't get to him in time. And then at the end you find out that she did it on purpose, and you're like, oh.
Oh, no, never mind.
That's kind of a dick move. And she actually does end up just becoming so consumed with, like, guilt and paranoia that she hangs herself at the end. So I guess you could say that, that's what I was thinking, she kind of grows and that she realizes, oh, that was shitty, and I'm done.
Yeah.
So.
Alright, so Justice Wargrave.
Spoiler alert.
Is the killer.
Is the murderer.
And his crime, he claims, is not a crime. I felt like that was a little ambiguous still.
Oh, yeah. Because that guy did end up being guilty, it wasn't a crime.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. And he has such a good sense for who's a criminal that even without all of the evidence in yet, he just knew.
I was like, whatever. Yeah. Vindictive prick.
Exactly. So, yeah, he as much as straight up says, yeah, I'm a psychopath.
Yeah.
So he got to the point where he just really wanted to kill some people, but his sense of justice kept him from just killing anybody.
Yeah, like murdering some innocent people on the street.
So he gathered together a bunch of people who were outside of the law as far as, like, couldn't be prosecuted for what he saw as their crimes.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know that all of them necessarily deserved death.
Yeah.
A couple of those cases are a little less clear. But it raises the question of if we're supposed to be sympathetic to Judge Wargrave or not. Do we want to save that for later, or?
We could talk about it, because, so the thing about Justice Wargrave, is that he is, like, he's hard to sympathize with once you get to the end and you find out it's him, because he's, like, sociopathic. He's talking about, like, killing animals when he was little and stuff, and you're like, oh, whoa, anything you think is a good idea is probably not a good idea. But some of the people on the island are pretty much dill holes. So I think that's kind of one of the questions, like, is his version of justice, you know, it's on one hand seems kind of justified sometimes, but on the other hand, it's like, you're a crazy person.
Right. I said, oh, he's Dexter.
Yeah. Which, yeah, okay, yeah, a little bit.
In,
only killing those who deserve it.
In a lot of ways. Dexter requires a little more proof, but...
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't do it on a gut feeling. But also, you could argue that he's not a very sympathetic character, even though he's played as one. But this isn't the Dexter podcast, so yeah. Something about that.
Yeah, and the whole
people,
thing...
People who only killed... The People Who Only Killed Dill Holes podcast.
And throughout the book, what I thought was interesting about Justice Wargrave is he's, like, he plays the calm and rational card. So he's always saying, like, well, you know, oh, here's how everyone could have done it, and here's what they could have done. And he's, like, really careful not to exclude himself. He'd be like, well, you know, I was sitting on the patio. I could have gone off and done it when no one was watching me at some point, which ended up being
what he did. Right, which is totally what happened. Everyone's like, no, couldn't be the judge. He's an old, rational guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, those things are both technically true, I guess.
And you could argue how rational he is, but yeah.
His actions are rational, even if his motives are not.
Yeah.
But I think they said that at some point. I think he said that was true of the killer at some point as well. I wonder if this is one where on a reread you're like, you wily old dog. So, getting on to perhaps some other characters.
Yeah.
Philip Lombard.
He's basically just a strong guy who's out for himself.
I assume he's ex-military of some form. He sounds like he has a really interesting past. He's been a lot of tight spots.
He's the one who abandoned the natives.
Yes. And basically said, yeah, well, I wanted to live. If they wanted to live, they should have tried harder.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you could make the argument like, well, yeah, okay.
I kind of have a weird respect for that.
You fessed up to it, so.
Plus, I think you might be the early 20th century equivalent of, like, Special Forces, or he might be like a James Bond type, for all I know.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, said he's a revolver.
That's right. The colonial version of James Bond.
Then we have Emily Brent, who is uptight, religious, crazy person.
Yeah, she's a hard-ass ascetic type. Really has no sympathy for anyone who acts differently than the way she thinks people should act. Which was her crime of omission, I guess. She had a servant girl who got knocked up, got herself in trouble, released her immediately, and then, you know, she was dead shortly thereafter. Which you could argue whether or not that's her fault. She's definitely a cold bitch, but...
Yeah, like, is her crime? She's just a jerk, not really a murderer. Yeah. I was thinking, like, I feel like most rich people at the time would have been like, oh, my maid got pregnant. Yeah, we need to fire her.
Okay, well, you're a self-righteous jerk, but I don't know that you're a killer.
Yeah.
It's one of those tropes that pops up in other stories. That idea of this character being bad because they drove someone to suicide. And I always wonder, is that something you can definitely pin on someone else?
Yeah.
I think blame can be... I mean, I definitely have heard of situations where you could say it was shared.
Well, yeah, like, if you're getting tormented by people and you're, like, already depressed, then, yeah, I'm sure that doesn't help you be less suicidal.
Right.
Maybe makes you more suicidal depending on how horrible they are to you. But ultimately, like... people make the argument that it's the person who commits suicide who, you know, is the one who does it, so, like, you can't force someone to commit suicide.
Right.
Otherwise you're just murdering them.
Yeah, I'd say it's generally true. The kind of suicide where you're like a Soviet general where you walk into your office and there's a loaded gun on your desk. I'm not sure that counts as suicide.
Or you're like a Roman like a Roman officer or something who
right.
basically gets told, yeah, you just need to go.
Just go ahead and fall on your sword so we don't have to like cut you into little chunks and throw you off a cliff.
Or like Socrates. They made him drink the poison on his own.
Right.
I'm like, dudes, you're weird.
It was a matter of appearance.
Or Seneca Crane in The First Hunger.
Yeah, there you go.
Has to eat the night berries all night long. Anyway.
Yeah. Right, forcing someone to commit suicide. Well, and then does... Wargrave managed to force Vera to commit suicide? Or is that like some weird hypnotic suggestion? That's what he thinks it is.
That's a good point there. Because she's like, oh, the last line of the poem. I feel like Hugo's watching me. I'll never escape it. Oh, the noose is there.
Right?
Okay.
Well, that's convenient. So I think Agatha Christie must believe that you can drive someone to suicide.
Let's see. Who else do we have? General MacArthur. Not the famed General MacArthur of World War II.
No, the fictional British general of World War I. We don't know anything about him, essentially. He's just... kind of vaguely sad. His nerves shatter the instant that he's accused of doing what he did.
Yep.
And he basically mopes around a lot. We are privy to his thoughts where, yes, he definitely ordered someone into a situation that he knew was a suicide mission.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that was that. Then he was dead.
Yep. And he's pretty much just looking forward to it.
That's true.
Not too much on him. So, Dr. Armstrong is up-and-coming doctor. He started his own practice, and he's getting really popular with richer women, richer families. His sordid past is he used to have a drinking problem, which he actually does seem pretty haunted by. He definitely doesn't drink anymore. But he operated on a patient while drunk in the past, which is not a very intelligent decision.
Yeah, well, it's definitely seriously unethical.
Yeah.
And I would say you bear responsibility for that death, but maybe not in the sense of murder one.
Right, like he didn't intentionally kill her, he just was a dumbass who was drunk while he was trying to do surgery.
And in response to that, he cleaned up his act.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to give too much credit to a guy who decides it's a good idea to get drunk and do surgery, but you're kind of set up to like him a little bit too, because he has managed to make a career out of doctoring to rich hypochondriacs, which is mm-hmm. a great gig if you can get it,
because mm-hmm.
they come to you all the time and they have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And if they get too annoying, you just make sure you diagnose with them with something that you can devise a treatment for, and then they go away for a while.
Yep.
And as he is saying, as he is thinking all of this, I'm like, okay, I kind of like this guy's attitude.
You're like, yeah, you just take this, you'll feel better.
Yeah. And for a lot of the book, he does seem like the most obvious candidate to be the killer.
Yeah, I was convinced for a little while that he was. It makes sense, because you can give someone an overdose of sleeping draught on purpose and stuff like that. It seemed to kind of fit together, but...
Yeah, and I wonder if part of the reason that the pacing and the structure of this book works is that to some of the things the characters are thinking, the people that they're suspicious of are the ones that... in large part, the readers were probably suspicious of.
Yeah.
Because the cast a little bit of doubt. Well, a little bit of doubt gets cast on everybody mm-hmm. at some point. But there are really only a couple of more plausible candidates. And, like, some of the ones who seem like they would be most capable of it seem least likely to have the motivation.
Mm-hmm.
If Lombard wanted everybody dead, he would just kill them.
Yeah.
Yeah. he would throw all the canned food in a boat and just leave the island. Good luck!
Doing it again. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Him and Blore are kind of the... And I guess Tony Marston are kind of the young, strong guys
yeah.
who could do it, but they none of them seem like the type to be that crafty.
Right. Well, and Blore... I think it was Lombard who said it to him, but he said, well, I don't think it's you, because you don't have the imagination.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I'm inclined to agree.
Inspector Blore, yeah.
He's a little too not subtle.
Yeah. He's one of those straightforward types.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, like I mentioned, we have Tony Marston, who is this young guy who likes to drive really fast, and he, I wouldn't say, actually did... murder someone.
Yes.
Driving recklessly, he just mowed over two kids and killed them. And
he does not feel a shred of remorse.
Yeah. He had some of his, like, rich friends get him off, and he still, like, just barrels around. He doesn't care.
He's like, dumb idiots should have gotten in front of my car,
yeah.
basically. Like, what?
So I was really happy he was the first one to die.
Yes, so he was not a good candidate to be the killer. And then that leaves us with the Rogers.
Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Rogers.
The Rogerses.
But not Fred Rogers.
No.
He never murdered him.
The murderer is Fred Rogers.
It'd be so weird. Mr. and Mrs. Rogers, they were servants to this rich old woman who really liked them and had arranged her will so that when she died, they would get... a fair portion of it, at least, and she took this medication, and they just didn't give her the medication one or two nights, and that was enough to kill her. She was old and ill already.
Yeah,
so.
It sounds like they hastened her death more than they did anything else.
Yeah.
Not to excuse it, but...
No.
It seems maybe less bad than a couple of the others, at least.
Well, I mean, I guess if you wanted to make the argument, like, if they were doing it because she was in pain, but they were doing it so they could get her money.
Yeah, they totally were.
Because I could see you can make the argument, like, well, that's not the worst thing. Like, if you're a caregiver and, like, someone's really old and in a lot of pain, like, there are ways you can kind of help them along that they might actually appreciate. But in that case, if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, then it's a little more sinister.
It does kind of set up one of those classic class scenarios of, I leave half my money to my beloved servants, and they're like, I wish the old bat would kick off already!
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Rogers are the lower class characters in the book, I guess.
Yeah, they have a little bit of the lower class accent.
And... Mm-hmm. Not that all the other characters are wealthy or anything, but they're not servants.
Right. And so. They're definitely, especially Mr. Rogers, are given not a lot of credit for intelligence, despite having no evidence of him being stupid whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, well, it couldn't have been Rogers, because he's an idiot, and he's like, hey, I just, here's your tea, and by the way, like, everything in this, on this whole island is in order, because I single-handedly keep track of it.
So there's that. Yeah, or like, well, maybe he killed his wife, because he was afraid she would spill, just because...
Right, yeah.
Well, he was obviously the one who orchestrated the other murder.
Right.
Dumb servant. I did find it pretty incredible that his wife died and he was serving tea, like, later that day.
I know, and they say, well, he couldn't be the killer because he's not smart enough, but no one points out maybe he's the killer because his wife just died and he doesn't seem to give a crap.
He's just serving fucking tea, man. Shouldn't he be, like, crying or something?
Or at least, like, sitting in a corner somewhere, like, get your own damn tea.
Yeah. Oh, I've just died, bitches.
Give me a day.
You would think. Not in 1930s England.
I guess not.
Characters are too British for their own good.
That's right.
So in addition to that little bit of classicism, other moral issues, there's a casual anti-Semitism. There's a character we don't get to meet, but his name is Isaac Morris. So, you know, he's Jewish because his name is Isaac.
Yes.
And Lombard in particular is talking about how he basically got bribed by Morris to go out to this island, and he's thinking of him as the little Jew, and like,
or even Jew boy, I think.
Yeah,
a couple,
like,
times.
His fat lips, and then he mentions that, like, he offered him 10,000 guineas and he was gonna say he didn't need it, but of course Morris knew he needed it. You couldn't fool a Jew about money.
It was I mean, I know I shouldn't find it comical, but it, from the 2014 perspective, it was, like, comically anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
I was like, you're like a cartoon character.
Yeah, like, who actually thinks that? But obviously, you know, people thought that shit.
Enough people thought that shit for Agatha Christie to include it in the book.
Yeah.
Won't accuse her of thinking that necessarily, though for all I know she did.
Well, Morris ends up getting killed off because
He arranged all the money stuff for the island, of course.
Right, but he had also committed his own...
Yeah, done something or other.
I don't remember what it was.
Yes.
No.
It was at least a bigger crime than being a Jew, so...
Yeah.
It could have been more...
Wargrave didn't feel he needed to die just because he was Jewish, at least. There is that.
Wargrave. Let's defend his character. Wargrave. Less psychopathic than Hitler. Glad we're setting the bar high.
It was like one of the characters we talked about, and I don't remember who. We were like, well, he did this, this, and this, and this. But he never killed anyone. Setting the bar high.
That's right.
Didn't commit murder, good person.
3-dub, best character ever.
So other issues... the feminism issue, so, I mean, there are 3 characters out of 10 that are women, but that's not really the thing I want to talk about.
Hell, that's more than some modern books have managed.
Yeah. So, the women in this book, Mrs. Rogers is just kind of a fragile woman who you know, falls into a hysterical swoon after all their crimes get played on that gramophone thing, and
right.
then she just gets killed off pretty fast. And the other two women, at least, aren't, like, just shrinking violets or anything, so... And the book at least does a pretty good job of at least suggesting that they could... That Brent, Miss Brent, and Vera could both be the murderer until, you know, it gets later in the book.
Yeah, they're saying, you know, like, you don't have to be a... You don't have to be a huge, powerful person to sneak up behind someone and crack their skull, like...
Yeah, or
they can manage it.
Really liked the point, actually, of, well, who uses poison? People who aren't as physically powerful. So that kind of puts the women more at suspicion. Which, traditionally, in history, poison is the murder weapon of women, so...
There you go.
Like, in ancient history and stuff, like, pretty much any time anyone gets killed with poison, it's a woman doing it, because that's all they can do, so... Pretty good point. But they're also still treated pretty hilariously quaint at times.
Yeah, so it's not the sort of it's not the sort of sexism that we see in a more modern book and go, this is not balanced, this is an issue. It's more like, oh, the servants are dead. Well, the women just, without having a conversation with anybody, just go into the kitchen and start making the next meal.
Yeah, they're serving the tea and making the food and cleaning up. And after Emily Brent dies, like, Vera's doing it on her own, and then Blore or something is like, oh, I have a little bit of domestic flair. I can help you out or whatever. But, yeah, like, it's not even discussed. It's just like, Vera's like, oh, I guess I need to make the tea.
Yeah, it's just assumed.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, well, the ladies will take care of it. While the men folks stand around and murder each other.
Apparently. And Vera does end up, you know, being a little bit of the guys trying to protect her thing. But it's not... That's not too horrible, so... And then I guess the big moral issue, which we've already talked about with Judge Wargrave, is really just, can you claim that these people committed murder? Did they deserve, in turn, to be murdered? And, like, is this all gray, or can we fall on, like, one end of the spectrum or the other?
I guess if you're going to have the big book club discussion point, it would be about whether that kind of vigilante justice is justified.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can someone like the judge be portrayed sympathetically? You know, do you not watch Dexter because you just can't sympathize with him?
Yeah.
Certainly there are people who feel that way. And,
apparently there are a number of people who watch Dexter and go, maybe I'm a sociopath, even though they're clearly not.
Well, the fact that you would even ask the question probably disqualifies you in some ways.
And then there are the people who, don't want to watch it because he's still murdering people.
Yeah, it's pretty... when society has gone out of its way to... establish a mechanism for dealing with things like murder, it is kind of difficult to be okay with somebody just dispensing justice left and right. Especially when especially in this book where the judge seems to base part of his evidence on his own highly honed, attuned sense of intuition as far as people's criminality.
Right, like, when that record played and it listed off the crimes, I looked at everyone's faces and they were all definitely guilty.
That's not the sort of thing you want to hear from a judge, really.
Yeah, like, okay, if someone told you that in a courtroom, would you accept that as good evidence?
I believe that was one of George Carlin's suggestions on how to get out of jury duty. If they ask you... if they ask you if you think you'd, when they ask you a question, you tell them that you would make a great juror because you can tell someone's guilty just like that.
Oh, yeah.
juror number 11, you are dismissed.
Yeah. That's, in addition to being the main moral issue, I would say, is also the big theme going on.
Yeah, just justice is, like, what is it? Is this it?
Yeah.
Does it exist in this book? I said the theme is justice or maybe nothing. I guess a little bit to what we've been talking about, like, the definition of what is a murder. You know, like, the remorse comes in. I guess that is kind of a thread through the book.
With some of the characters.
I felt like I was focused on that more than the book was, probably. Because, like, Toni Marsden, when he dies, you're just kind of like, the world's probably better off without you. You were going to kill more innocent people by accident and then not feel bad about it, which makes me not like you very much.
But, like, Wargrave mentions that, that he was kind of hoping some of them would begin to develop remorse as they found out, like, what was going on. And the reason he killed Toni Marsden off first was because he knew he was never going to feel remorse. Right. So fuck that guy. He was
never going to get there. So, as far as symbols go, we have the 10 little soldiers. I think they were soldiers in my... I feel like they're still soldiers.
They were soldiers in mine.
I feel like they still were in mine. I don't know why... There have to be so many tweaks to this thing over the years.
Yeah.
And considering the starting point...
Yeah.
Yeah, so every time someone dies, one of the little soldiers disappears.
Yeah, and that's actually how they find out that some of the people are dead. Because they're like, oh, there's a soldier missing, shit.
Well, better go find the body.
Yep. Elvira has hers at the end.
Yeah. So the ending of this book,
yeah,
is something I wanted to mention because I'm not sure if it was the right way to end it. I'm not sure it was necessary at all. So you have this kind of mini breakdown by a couple of police inspectors and then that's over and you don't know. They just cast additional... Well, actually, they...
Introduce a new piece of evidence. Because they're like, well, maybe Vera just hanged herself after she killed Lombard.
And then right.
The one says, yeah, but why was the chair neatly tucked against the wall? And you're right. Like, oh, shit!
Yeah. That's right. That was kind of significant.
Yeah.
And then they're kind of looking at it in a lot like the 10 people, well, 9 people on the island were looking at it after the first death, I think.
Uh-huh.
You know, well, it couldn't have been these guys. They're too respectable.
Yeah, yeah.
And it probably wasn't the ladies, but no one, we don't know. And then there's a little after epilogue, I guess, that is a letter in a bottle that... Justice Wargrave.
May or may never get found.
Yeah, that was found, which is why we have it, but he chucked it off the island before he offed himself, I guess. And he explains the whole thing.
Yeah, he basically, like, villain monologues.
Yeah, he does.
These are why I invited all the people to the island. This is how I kill all of them.
My argument is that never should have been part of the book, and that it should have just ended after the police inspectors with us still not being sure. So, as the reader, you just have to come up with your best theory and suck it up!
Yeah, and my argument is that in this sort of classic book, you can't really get away with not telling people who the murderer is, because it's just what the audience expects.
I know, you audience people, you get so pissy when you don't get a tidy little bow on the end of it.
I did think... Ooh, sorry. I did think the message in the bottle thing was kind of silly. And I was surprised it was Justice Wargrave. And I thought, like, a couple of the things were, like, a little wacky, how he did some of that stuff.
It was very elaborate.
Yeah, it kind of felt like, Ben and I were talking about how this book is also a play that I think Agatha Christie adapted to the stage. And, in the play, I guess, you can't really just have a character, like, reading a letter that they wrote about how they did all of it, because that's, like, that'd be horrible dramatic action.
What?
So, in the play, I guess, like, they actually, you know, figure it out and get it explained in person, which I think makes good sense on stage, and I almost would have preferred that to happen in the book as well.
Yeah, if you're gonna, if you have to explain everything at the end, which I don't necessarily have a problem with in general, the message in a bottle way of doing it was very silly.
Yeah.
If you're going to explain everything, you have to do it in a way that feels like it's part of the story, maybe.
Yeah.
It's
like tacked on.
And I had no idea who did it, and I was pretty happy with that. I actually just assumed that whoever this Mr. Owen was, who was the judge, as it turns out, but I assumed that Mr. UN Owen, Mr. Unknown, did have a hidey hole on the island and was just so secreted away that no one could find it.
Yeah, Ben thought there was an 11th person on the island.
I totally did.
Like I said, I thought it was Armstrong, and then I was like, oh shit, I don't know.
Well, then when the police inspector said the chair was set aside, yeah, so someone was alive somewhere, I was like, well, fuck, everyone's dead, so the 11th guy theory wins.
Yeah, and then Justice Wargrave was like, lol, and you're like, damn it!
I was like, hey! You can't fake your death red herring my ass.
It's just a red herring.
Much like communism. And Judge's death was a red herring.
Okay, so strengths of the writing.
Well, it's tightly plotted and quickly paced.
Yes.
And you can, I guess a lot of the tropes are recognizable to the modern reader, but I think that it reads a lot like a modern thriller does in a lot of ways.
It's a lot shorter.
Yeah.
I was surprised, actually, how short it was.
And she resists the urge to throw in bullshit asides for no reason, which a lot of authors have trouble with.
Or, I mean, she could have spent an extra, like, 3 or 4 days on the island and get into all of their thoughts and feelings and backstories and, like, right, like even more. But she was like, no, I'm just going to write a tense little
mystery. Yeah, well, when we were outlining, we said that if this had been a Stephen King novel, it would have had an extra 400 pages where everybody got really intensely paranoid and fucked up and crazy by the end. Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling Ben that Emily Brent, because she's like so religious and starts to go a little wacky towards the end, I was like, oh man, she's just like begging to be a Stephen King character. He loves crazy religious people.
Yeah, I know. She would have had half of the people in the house playing off against the other half until someone finally just shot her.
Yeah, totally. In Stephen King's version, the murderer would have like somehow convinced everyone on the island to murder each other or something.
Something, yeah.
Yeah. And then we were thinking, the lack of character development, is it really a weakness, or is it kind of intentional because the purpose of the book is not to build character, it's just to, like, give you an interesting mystery to think about?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's hard to consider a weakness because I don't think the characters were supposed to be developed, personally. You get just enough of them to try to figure out how these personalities might interact and to put a little bit of tension in there, and since it's more whodunit and less crazy psychological stew.
Yeah, definitely.
We don't need to get that deep into them, especially since there are a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah, 10 people in a short amount of time. Like, holy shit, my brain's exploding. There's so many characters. Excuse me. So, what's your verdict?
Overall, I enjoyed it. There were a lot of things about it that didn't seem very fresh to me, but it did make me wonder how fresh they were when it was written. I thought it was... So that was kind of interesting from a historical perspective, I guess. I would not recommend against reading it, I think would be the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to read. It's not very long. You read it in a couple afternoons, even if you're not particularly trying to.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty interesting. Fun to read. Not a huge mystery fan, so I wasn't like, oh, I love it! I'm going to read more Agatha Christie! But, you know, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So what you reading right now?
I was reading Chronicle of a Death Foretold by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. He died last week, and I decided to read something that he had written in his honor, but most of his books are really long and dense, and that's a novella, so. And it's quite good. I'd recommend Chronicle of a Death Foretold.
All right. I'm reading The Public School Advantage by Chris and Sarah Lubensky. Well, that last name may or may not be pronounced that way. So it's nonfiction, and it's about, I guess, a study that they did on whether public schools are more or less efficient and effective than private schools, and this idea of market-based school choice sort of education. And based on the title, I can assume that they have some interesting conclusions. But I have only gotten through the first couple chapters, so I haven't seen any of the data yet. So if you have any comments or questions, or I don't know,
anything,
you just have words that you think we need to see for some reason, you can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter, @novelideaspod.
And you can find us on iTunes.
And if you do that, rate and review and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and thanks to the people who've been kind of tweeting at us, and Adam, we still need to figure out something for you to do with us, but we'll work on it.
We'll get there. Next week...
Yeah, I realized that it was almost the end of April, and that last year we did, like, an LGBTQ month, even though we did a bad job of picking the books.
Hey, we did Maurice, and we loved the hell out of it.
Yeah, but that's true.
I think that's pretty good.
But I just realized that today, and that we haven't been doing that, so we're not going to do a full month, but we decided to go ahead and read something in that vein in honor of it. So we're going to do Angels in America by Tony Kushner. It's a Pulitzer Prize winning, Tony winning, I believe, play about AIDS in the United States in the 1980s. So
presumably it will have a very happy ending, is what you're saying.
Yeah, everyone's going to be all happy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Everyone's going to get cured of AIDS and
will be fine.
Live. It's probably the plot.
As I've stated, I don't have a lot of 80s nostalgia, so as far as I know, that's what actually happened. Anyway. I believe that will do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
One chop himself in love, and then there were six little Indian boys playing with a hive. Bumblebee stung one, and then there were five little Indian boys going in for a low. One got in sensory, and then there were four little Indian boys going out to sea. A red herring swallowed one, and then there were three little Indian boys walking in the zoo. A big bear hugged one, and then there were two little Indian boys sitting in the sun. One got freezed up, and then there was one little Indian boy left all alone. He went hanging himself, and then there were none.